the Antisocial Podcast, episode 202, maybe? 202? Something like that? Anyway, who cares? It's another week, another episode, another guest. And this is a return guest, might I add, James Norbert Avani. James was on the podcast episode 36 or 37, something like that. And it's been years since he's been on the podcast. So I figured one thing I'm going to do this year is try and get a few people to come back on and just check in, see how they're doing since the last time we spoke. And for you guys, instead of just a quick sort of drive-by of a guest and just quickly learn a little bit about their life and a couple of cool stories, get these people to come back in a little bit more regularly and just continue to talk and see what they're up to. And just, you can keep up to date with what they're doing. Cause a lot of these people have been on the podcast do incredible things and continue to do so. And James is one of them. So I thought, let's get him back on and we'll have a bit of a chin wag and see what he's been up to over the past several years. I caught up with James out at his place in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, and he's got a cool little place. And we just spoke about his music, as I mentioned before, what he's been doing for the last few years. He's just finished recording his next release, which has not been announced or named yet. So even at the time of recording this intro, nothing's been announced just yet. So stay tuned for that. And at the time of recording our episode, he was getting ready to go over to LA to the yearly NAMM conference, which is like this big sort of music-related networking conference, which has got musicians and suppliers and people that work in the industry. And as you can tell, I've never been there myself because I was just poorly explaining what NAMM is. Clearly, I need to go. But anyway, he's getting ready to go to that. So we spoke a little bit about NAMM, a little bit about, you know, just different things, social media, you know, his own music, just where his head's at these days. And it was just a great chat, really chilled guy, super nice guy. Looking forward to doing another catch up with him sometime down the track as well. If you want to check out his music, you can go to jamesnorbertavani.bandcamp.com, just so you can make it really easy for yourself. Just click on the show notes in your podcast player or over at andydowling.net, and I'll have links to everything, all his social media handles, some YouTube videos, and Bandcamp and the rest of it. So go and check out all of that stuff. I'll put a couple of my favorite tracks in there if you want a little bit of a taste of what he is all about. So lots and lots of cool stuff. Great guy. And we're just going to dive straight into this episode. Please enjoy this great chat with James Norbert Avani.
I don't know what it was. Just a change came over me where I felt like I didn't want to share, you know, like a lot on social media. It didn't become like a thing that I planned on doing every day and had any kind of method to the madness. I think like a lot of people discover, and it's been talked about, I did find it a distraction thinking about doing it. And then I would spend, you know, you would look at statistically how long you were on it each day. And I got turned off from the whole thing. So I feel like I've been doing it a lot less over the last couple of years, actually.
Did you have one of those, I don't know what sort of phone you got, but on iPhone, you've got like the usage counter and it says, you've used like 13% more or less on the last, this week versus last week.
Yeah.
When those things started to pop up on my phone, I thought, okay, this is a wake up call.
Yeah.
It was pretty embarrassing to begin with. Now it's not too bad. It looks okay compared to what it was beforehand. But I think you get so sucked into it where you don't really understand how much it's integrated into people's lives. Like it's become this addictive thing. It's an extension of people's bodies now. Yeah. I mean, the phone, but like, the social media, the capturing of just pretty much every little movement that we do every day.
I feel like there was some strategy to it when I first started doing it to get myself out there as you know, on the scene, if you will.
Yeah.
Especially in this new scene that I was in with the instrumental stuff
for
the first few years, and I really did go at it with a like a strategy, and it sounds strange, but I feel like there was a kind of point where I feel like I'd achieved that, and then I wasn't feeling like it was really doing anything beneficial for, you know, the creative part of it or even the kind of promotion part of it. And so I just kind of shied away from the whole thing. But yes, it was I have an iPhone and it was saying, you know, you're on average, you've used this app, you know, some horrific amount of time per day.
Yeah.
And yeah, it. I think it also coincided with when I started working for myself. I think when I used to have a day job, I used to kind of use it a lot more as an escape tool and to feel connected to, I don't know, something that wasn't that all day long. And yeah, now that I, you know, kind of work for myself, just the interest to entertain myself using it has just kind of vanished. So just kind of, yeah, don't look at it and use it anymore.
I think once you start, I think it's the prying away from it to begin with, which is hard, especially when you're sort of, you're not conscious to, I guess, how much you're sucked into the whole thing. I mean, I'm way better than I used to be, but I'm pretty shocking with social media. But I'll catch myself out and like abuse myself because I've just found myself just scrolling through like an Instagram feed in the morning, just seeing what everybody's been doing for the last 24 hours. And it's just like, it's crazy. And it's amazing how much watching what other people do can affect your mood as well, or affect your behaviors as far as what you choose to do that day. So some people, it might, you know, drive you to go, oh, well, I've got to hustle. I've got to do my thing now because I can see someone else is doing it. Or you get that whole, what's it called, FOMO sort of thing. You know, you just feel like you're missing out on everything because everyone else is having this amazing time. And I think once I started being more conscious of that and started to pry away from it, which was hard to begin with, now it's sort of like, it's a non-issue. Like it doesn't affect me as much. Like I'm not sort of like, oh, I'm missing out on not being part of it.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I agree about that. I tend to only post to it. I don't tend to ever look at it the way I used to look at it for, and you know, to pass time or boredom or whatnot. I never do that anymore. And I mean, when I do look at it though, you know, I can't help but get the sense that, and it's totally understandable, I think a lot of guys invest into it thinking that it's kind of the, you have to be on it and seen to be, you know, the image of success on social media is going to translate into real life. And I didn't find that personally it did translate into real life. I feel like I've had some really cool opportunities come my way, and by all accounts I have like really small numbers across the board on social media. So I didn't really, and I still don't see it as the kind of be all and end all of, you know, a measure of your success or whatever it is, as what's on there.
Yeah. Well, I remember like years ago, you know, when Facebook sort of first started kicking off and it was all about sort of the amount of likes you could get on your page, you know, so that would sort of be an indicator of how popular you were. I remember like booking agents were like, you know, looking at Facebook pages before they made a decision as to whether they're going to book your band for their venue, you know, and so the reaction to that was bands started to, you know, buy fake likes from like Indonesia or, you know, the Philippines or something like that. And so these numbers would just go through the roof and just to try and fabricate, you know, that they were bigger than what they were. Even like MySpace was like that as well.
Right.
And, but I think now, like, you know, Instagram now, you can't see how many people like a photo for other accounts. And Facebook's done the same on mobile as well. And I think now what you've just said is probably the direction where a lot of these decision makers are going, where it's like the numbers don't even matter anymore.
Sure.
You know, it's a metric. It's something to sort of reference and get a bit of an understanding. But ultimately, you know, I think the direction is going to go is it'll just go back to what's the content, like what's the music, what's the creative output, and is it at a standard that can be utilized, you know, can be marketed, is it an opportunity to be associated with it? So it comes back to the actual thing itself, the integrity of whatever it is, instead of just a perceived popularity.
That's it. I mean the kind of the likes game, you know, I feel like it pushes people into, you know, they think how many likes something has is a measure of its artistic merit or quality, which I think is silly because that can really shape, especially like, you know, younger guys coming up. They might think that because whatever they've made is not received well, you know, in like counts or whatnot, that it's bad. And it becomes less about doing it for oneself and more about, I guess, pleasing the masses, which is never what I've been about. You know, I just kind of do it for myself. You know, the music. And so that was probably a lot to do with just backing away from it all and shying away from it all as well.
I've noticed, I mean, you, you've done some shows here and there over the last couple of years, but yeah. You know, I've noticed that you step back quite a bit from a lot of that, mm-hmm. and although, you know, get to see some Insta stories along the way and what you're doing day to day, but yeah. You know, for the most part, it just looks like you've been slaving away behind the scenes and just, you know, working on your own stuff. And is that something that maybe 5 or 6 years ago would have been a difficult concept for you to grasp, that you could sort of take a step back away from mm-hmm. the noise and have the patience? Because I always feel like there's, even without social media, that I think everything moves so quickly these days that you sort of have this underlying stress or panic that, you know, if you're not moving quick enough or doing stuff or putting things out there all the time, that sure. people are going to forget about you.
I think that's a real thing that a lot of guys think about and consider. And I did consider that, but at the end of the day, the music and the... I really do just do it for myself, even if I didn't do shows or have a brand or, you know, went back to just having a full-time job and stepped completely. I mean, I would still just do it for fun anyway. So it was something that, you know, crossed my mind, but I just felt like I couldn't make that a consideration. I can't worry about how the internet is perceiving me when I'm trying to, you know, focus on bettering myself as a musician and create something that I legitimately am excited by and really challenged by. So the other side of that is, I feel like, you know, maybe this, some people might agree, but when I used to have a full-time job, there's kind of a pressure you think that you put forward, you know, that you're active and busy in the scene and, you know, you're still doing stuff and not kind of stuck somewhere, you know, for 8 hours a day and whatnot. So when I stopped doing that, it just wasn't really, there wasn't that pressure to kind of, you know, be really busy all the time in my other life and have the perception that I was really busy in the other life. Whereas the truth is now I'm kind of busier than ever musically and working on that with every waking minute. But the pressure to announce that to the world is no longer there.
Yeah.
Which is just a funny observation I found when I went from, you know, one thing to the next.
I remember when you made a post about it, because it would have been a couple of years ago now, where you said more or less, I'm now doing this full time, like I've taken the plunge.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna give this a shot and see what happens. And I've built it up to a point now where, you know, you feel safe enough that you can take a calculated risk on it all, and here you are, you're still doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. To go back to what you said before about kind of taking a step back, like the perception of taking a step back from touring and all that kind of stuff. That was a conscious decision, not really for two reasons. One is that for me, the making of the music is kind of the main thing. The gigging and the touring and all that has always been kind of a secondary pleasure. I mean, I certainly love it, but I mean, as you well know, it takes an enormous chunk out of you, both, you know, mentally and financially and time wise and all of the rest of it. There are so many you know, mitigating factors, but yeah. And another thing was, I've always kind of observed, not for everyone, but a lot of guys that I came up with in the music scene who have kind of stuck it out and made touring the kind of focus of their life. Yeah, I just kind of detected, and not with everyone, but with a lot of people, that, you know, a lot of other parts in life became really neglected, and maybe they missed out on a lot of other things that to me are super important. Like there's a lot in life to me that's really important apart from, you know, being out there touring all the time and doing all that. And so yeah, like I've had plenty of offers to do like long tours and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't see the kind of financial and time sacrifices kind of worth it.
Yeah.
Really?
And I think, to be able to actually sort of pause for a moment and actually ask those questions, I mean, most people wouldn't, you know, because you're instantly thinking about, I've never been given this opportunity before. If I don't, you think about the consequences of not doing it rather than the benefits of not doing it, you know, so it's just the way you look at it. I mean, we were talking earlier about, canceling, not taking up offers for shows.
Yeah.
And And, you know, the 20-year-old me would be in absolute tears because, you know, you're missing out on what you think are these once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, but you realise that there's other priorities in life, you know, and you have to sort of work out what's most important. And just because, you know, there's other people out there that are smashing it out and doing 58 tours and, you know, being in Europe for 8 weeks or playing these festivals and doing all this great stuff, it's, you know, everything comes at a cost, you know, and it comes at a cost by saying no, and it comes at a cost by saying yes as well. And just everyone's different.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Like some people are willing to do it. I just, I'm going to do some pretty heavy touring off the new record and I want to do it to a point where I can see how much I can take of it and, you know, learn a bit about myself in that way. But I'm pretty lucky with the guys in my band. We're all pretty on the same page as far as we don't want to do things kind of in a silly way or put ourselves in the red in any kind of way, or, you know, whether that be financially or with time or anything like that. So the things that we have done have been pretty well calculated efforts where, you know, we all come out of it with our sanity and in the green in some way.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, the way we just want to do it moving forward.
And I think the good thing, it's always been a reoccurring theme, especially in the last few years, is that the rule book keeps changing anyway. I mean, there's no real rule book anyway.
Mm.
But I think, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 plus years ago, there's always one or two ways to do something. And I think now you're at the, you know, your only limitation is your own creativity, you know, and you can take on, you know, whether it be touring, performing, writing, recording, whatever, you can do it your own unique way. I mean, we've got so many different options out there. So how you put music out there, how you promote it, you know, how much time you put into something, it's completely up to the individual now. And it all works. It's just the execution of it really that makes the difference.
No, I totally agree to that. And yeah, going back to what you said about taking the plunge and kind of leaving my last job. I mean, to me, kind of success is being able to do the music thing and not like take a huge sacrifice in all the other areas in my life that I'd spent the last 10 years working so hard for. So, you know, I don't want to say, I make my living from being a guitarist, but like live in my mum's basement, you know? So that kind of, to me, was not an option. So, it was important to that. That's why I kind of try to shoot down the middle and not do anything that's going to kind of jeopardize what I have now.
And I think one thing you said earlier before we started recording is like, you know, one of those goals that you're looking at down the track is just time, you know, just creating more of it. Yeah. You know? So, and however you do that, making different, tweaking different things in your life and making things more efficient and making sure that when you do something, it's more intentional and that just, you know, creates more time to do things that are meaningful for yourself.
Yeah. 100%. The last few years have definitely been the best of my life, like without a question, just because I feel like I've had the time. And that's it. To me, that's the only currency that really matters. I can't see that changing. That is, you know, I'm a bit of a beach addict and like getting in there every day is one of the things that I do for sanity. And so, I do have kind of little fantasies about living in some little beach hut in the middle of nowhere. And just working enough to kind of float me along on the bills and just have more time to, you know, work on myself and work on everything else, including the music,
Have you, especially since sort of taking that step to, you know, be self-employed and not have your traditional job anymore, did you find or do you still find challenges in, it's not the right way of explaining it, but like, maintaining discipline or motivation along the way just to stay on track or even just routine and things like that? Because, you know, the benefits of being employed is that you're at the mercy of your employer.
Yeah.
So they sort of set the guidelines and, you know, you could cruise.
That's
if you
right.
wanted to a degree.
Yeah.
And somebody and I else did is cruise. Responsible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, is it still a thing that you still have to think about or be conscious of?
Yeah, I think it has its pros and cons like anything else. It took me a little while to adjust to the kind of, you know, fluctuating, you know, workload and income load. You know, some months are amazing and then some months are quiet and all that kind of stuff. But I'm a really self-motivated person, so it's never really been an issue for me. I found it incredibly difficult to motivate myself for someone else's, you know, dream, whatever that was, whatever job I was doing. I always found that really difficult. But yeah, working for myself, it's no issues there. And I think that's the important part, is to take the plunge, because it's like you better work or you're gonna there's no guaranteed paycheck coming at the end of the week unless you make it happen. So
that's it. There's no I'm not gonna cruise this week, or you know, if you're planning to cruise, you've got to plan in advance. You've got to be intentional about that cruise. You know, you can't just decide to chuck a sickie or whatever it might be. It's just it's a different world, and that's something that always scared me when I started to do things more myself rather than relying on others, is that while it is exciting that you can, like, what you get back is what you put in.
Yeah, exactly.
That is scary as well, because you sort of then go, am I actually disciplined? Mm. Do I have the motivation? Do I actually want this bad enough that I'm actually going to be able to put it in order to get what I want back? Do I actually want to expose myself to the realities of life, or is it better just to sort of pretend that I'm really motivated, but still, you know, just rely on other people to keep me going? And that's a really difficult thing for a lot of people to tackle.
Yeah, I almost feel like as musicians, we're pretty well equipped for it, because sometimes I think about, you know, for example, making an album is such an insane thing to do.
Mm.
Like, there must be some high level of kind of OCD involved just to focus on this one task for, you know, years on end sometimes. So I suppose I've gotten some skills in being able to focus out of that. And
what's the dangling carrot when you've got a goal, something that you have to do? Like, for me, just to try and articulate it, is like, the thing that motivates or drives me is that I have to build up a degree of obsession over a concept or an idea, where it almost becomes destructive.
Right.
That if I don't do this, my life's going to fall apart.
Right.
I have to put critical odds on the, in front of me, that there is just it's a non-negotiable. It has to happen.
Right.
I have to at least take a stab at it and complete it in some way, whatever that means. Mm. Or I'm going to live a life of regret, and this will be, and it could be the most trivial thing.
Yeah.
But this thing could be my biggest regret on my deathbed. And but I need, for myself, that's what I need to do.
Yeah.
I need to up the stakes in order for me to actually take that first step and go, all right, I'm doing it. Because I can't sleep anymore. It's so uncomfortable for myself. But I mean, you might not have to go to that level of craziness. But do you have sort of any kind of obsession when it comes to goals, or sort of an intended sort of outcome?
My kind of main kind of scaffolding I put around the goal thing is, I always just try to think, you know, if someone was to find, let's just say, in the desert, a body of work of mine that I'd made, or something that I'd created, you know, that creation is going to be a reflection of who I was at that time.
Mm.
So was I, you know, a lazy individual? Was I a great starter of things, but a terrible finisher of things? You know, was there attention to detail? Those are the things that make me panic when I'm working on anything, I think. And, you know, so that kind of makes me, whatever it is that I'm working on, I give it my all with the intention of it being found by, you know, or, you know, even if it's just music, someone listening to it, you know, that's really a look into the mirror of who I am, like anything that I make. So that makes me focus a lot on making sure I give it everything and work really, really hard on it.
Is that an exciting concept for you, to say what the potential is of what you could leave, or is it a fear of, I don't want somebody to look back and see this period of my time, as you said, like a lazy period, or something. I don't want that to happen, so I'm going to make sure that I avoid that happening.
Yeah, I don't know if it's there's nothing negative about it. I think it's more of an inspiring thing.
You're inspired thing. I'm driven by pure fear. Just
fear motivator.
Fear and this psychotic obsession over, you know, just making it happen. But I mean, it's one of those things where you got to find, you know, ultimately what motivates an individual, and for some of us, it's different for everybody. You know, some people One thing I've had to sort of wake myself up to is that I've really, not so much that I care what other people think, but I think it's I'm sort of very social and out there interacting with people, and yeah. I think if I'm putting something out there, there needs to be some level of feedback as well, and so sure. that motivates me to do things and put things yeah. out there. One thing I've tried to do a lot more of is, and this is what it's really interesting, like talking to you, because I think this is where you sit, is you're happy just to immerse yourself in something and be completely disconnected.
Yeah, sure.
You don't need to make sure that there's any feedback pumping back. No. Obviously, once you put something out there, you want to see what happens with it.
Yes, but yeah, it's not the motivator though.
No. I mean, obviously for you, it's it's that self-inspiring thing of just being able to see what you can achieve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So it's definitely a, yeah, it's interesting hearing how other people tick, because it's like, oh man, like I'm definitely motivated by different things along the way.
Well, I think about like a lot of the kind of clients that I work with, usually a lot of the sessions are, you know, especially at the beginning, like a lot of guys want to make, let's just say, you know, music. They want to make an EP or an album or something like that.
Mm.
And the you know, the huge question is like, why do you want to do that?
Mm.
You know, I always ask guys like, why do you want to do it? Do you want to be kind of relevant in the online community? Is this some kind of, you know, status for you? Is this going to give you some kind of sense of identity? Like, why do you want to do it?
Yeah.
And I think most of the guys that are most willing to see through the challenges and the pain of like everything that comes with being a musician, especially an independent musician, is that there's a strong element of like, you know, music chooses you. You don't really get to pick it. You just, from whether you're young or you've been inspired by something or whatever it is, I think there's an element to, you know, you realize it's picked you. You don't really get a say. You just have to do it, whatever that is. So I certainly feel like it picked me, and yeah. I just kind of have to do it. I've tried in life to not do it and take time away from it and all of those kind of things. And so the motivation comes pretty naturally in the form of that I just have to do it. And I think that's an important question that a lot of guys need to kind of ask themselves sometimes, is like, why put yourself through the pain of being in a band? And, you know, is this just something you're doing for kind of social, you know, satisfaction? Or, you know, do you just, if none of that existed, if there was no feedback loop, would you still do it?
Yeah, you know,
is the question. And I certainly asked myself all those questions, you know, as you get older, you know, just like priorities that you weren't even thinking about even 5 years ago become these giant elephants in the room that you start thinking about. And, you know, so I did lots and lots and lots of introspection and decided, you know, yep, I'll play guitar for a living. What a great idea.
Ka-ching.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it must be, obviously, in that respect, it's so much more manageable and even appealing to be able to be a solo artist, solo performer, because
I love it.
You're creating your own environment, and you're creating an environment that works for you. There's a friend of mine from Melbourne sent me a message the other day, and he was listening to a bunch of podcasts, but he was talking about how he can never keep a band together. Like the band just keeps falling apart, and they have these band meetings, and it's all formalized, and then everyone's committing to stuff, and then they don't do it, they don't follow through, and so he's just constantly chasing his tail, trying to get together. And I go,
yeah,
what's exactly what you said before? Why are you doing it? Yeah. Like, what's the motivation? And is it the same motivation as the rest of the guys? And he admitted it. He's like, yeah, well, I think a lot of the other guys I play with, they're people that I know from friendships, extended circles, and they're guys that enjoy it, but probably don't have the same drive to achieve what I want to achieve. And I'm like, well, that's probably why, that's probably why your bands keep falling apart.
Yeah.
But that's always the additional challenge of trying to find a group of people that are all on the same page and have the same set of goals, keeping in mind that everyone's got their own individual lives and have got it all trying to adjust and flex in the hope that you can still work towards this common goal.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're, if you're, you know, a solo artist,
yeah.
There's, I mean, there's completely different other challenges that you've got to take into account. But in, right. in that domain, it's far more appealing because you're at your own mercy, no one else's.
Yeah, there's the cons can be the loneliness aspect for sure. Because I come from the band world originally, and yeah, of course. I miss those weekly jams or twice a week,
yep.
you know, rehearsals and you know, all the brotherhood aspect of being a unit and all of that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it might be the typical thing. I'm a highly motivated guy and I was always feeling just really held back by, you know, the you're only as strong as the weakest link kind of problem, you know, trying to factor in everyone else's financial lives and personal lives and, you know, annual leaves and all of the rest of it. And so, yeah, like going solo was certainly, I never planned on doing it. It wasn't like a plan of, hey, I'm going to do this solo instrumental guitar thing. I just, I'm just kind of really following the breadcrumbs, really. And it just seems to be going really well and I'll explore it for as long as it'll kind of have me and I've really enjoyed it. But yeah, the cons are certainly the only thing holding the whole thing back is me. That's really it. Like I feel like I've been, you know, really productive musically as far as, you know, I've released more albums in a few years than any other band I'd done in 10 years, you know. Yeah. And it's easier in a lot of ways. You know, there's like you pointed out, there's a lot less moving parts and, you know, you can work with other people much easier because the band isn't the draw card.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, you know, there's a lot of things that are easier about it for sure.
Do you find that you're a natural control freak? And this setting kind of helps you with that because you know, you don't have to worry about the dynamics of other people that you have to sort of, as you said, like, you know, that whole thing of, you know, you're only as strong as the weakest link in the band, you know. Yeah. Have you got that tendency yourself?
I feel like I'm not a control freak when it comes to the creative side of it, but I just feel like I've always been a really fast worker and, you know, a lot of people that I've worked with historically, you know, across the board, whether it be bands or just other musicians and stuff, they might not have the same kind of circumstances as me. So they're just much slower with stuff. Mm. And I'm always kind of hyper aware of the expiration date of ideas or, you know, a concept or a song or whatever. So I move really fast to avoid that. And yeah, so I don't know if I do everything because I might be a total control freak. I don't know. But I feel like it's just because I work really fast. And the more I've brought people into the circle, I've seen things get more difficult and slow down. And maybe it's just habit. Maybe I have a thing in place. And yeah, just kind of eliminating as many of those moving parts as possible means that I experience less snags and setbacks and then feelings of frustration. It's always just kind of a good time from start to finish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the challenges I continue to have and I'm trying to get better at it is I remember there's a quote, I think it might be Lily Allen or something like that, and said, if I want to get a job done, I do it myself. Or if I want to get a job done well, I do it myself.
Yeah.
And I remember reading this quote years and years ago and just got branded into onto my skull. It was just like, just this is your direction, this is your focus. And for me, it's always been a case of I'll do it, and you just burn yourself out and not actually ask for help or try and find help along the way. And so
that's true.
I think you start to build a bit of this control freak sort of scenario where it's just you've almost built up a lack of trust in other people because you just assume that nobody can do it as well as you can, even though you know more than likely you're going to do a really shit job of whatever you're doing. But because you're in control, at least you know you're in control of how shit it's going to be, you know?
Yeah,
it's the dumbest stuff, but it's like, that's one thing that I've been making a concentrated effort to get better is being self-sufficient is really good, but also understanding when to get expertise in to help And it's sort of like the, you know, running your own business. You know, you might bring a contractor in who might help out with a task. You know, they're not an employee. They're not a stakeholder in your business. They're just somebody that you go, hey, I need. It's like, you know, tap leaks or whatever, and you go and get a plumber. You pay them the invoice. They come and do the work, and off they go.
Yeah,
and that's been a big thing for me, is to start leaning on expertise and getting people in to help where need be, and not worry that I'm losing control over a situation.
Yeah, sorry, you just I tried to fix a sink plumbing problem the other day. Didn't go well. Definitely should have called a real man. I like am still really inspired to work. I mean, I'm constantly inspired by those around me and musicians I work with and friends, and I certainly bring lots of people into the process. And I think there's a lot of there's a lot to be said for that, because in the world I'm in now, the kind of instrumental solo guitar world, which, seems to be just getting bigger and bigger and more of a thing. You know, lots of guys are obviously getting into it, and you know, fair enough. Like, some people just do what is possible, but sometimes there's a perceived, there's lots of technology coming at people. It seems like this technology that was exclusively, you know.
Some background noise.
Yeah. Thank you, Bertie. You know, used by professionals is now just kind of in the hands of everyone and they're able to make music and just put it out there. And, you know, one of the big things I think is like, you know, drums and bass, like the programmability of all that stuff. Is, you know, really obvious to a lot of people. It's really obvious to me, which is why I don't, you know, do that on my records. You know, I work with Dave for the drums, and even on this time I had Liam come in and lay some bass down on the album, and I've got Bo doing some keys, and there's lots of things that I know I can't do better than those people, but I have a vision for those sounds to be at a certain level, so I'll bring them in. And to me, that's the most exciting part about it. I try to get as much of that collaborative thing going on within this kind of bizarre, insular, isolated kind of solo world as I can.
I think through what you do and, you know, the reputation you created, you sort of bring other personalities into the spotlight as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the guys that you play with, they probably would never have known who they were.
Sure.
Not to say they weren't doing anything, but because of the connection that I've got with you, you've been able to bring people into your spotlight, and as a result, I've discovered people because of that. So it's kind of cool where it's like, it's not just about ultimately your music and what you're creating, but you're bringing in other people that are able to show what their potential is as well.
I have that very same experience when I go and watch other, you know, solo guys playing. I'm like, man, this bass player is absolutely ridiculous. Never heard of this guy. This drummer is insane. And you're right. It does put in the spotlight lots of other musos that might not have been doing anything else. But yeah, the guys that I work with they're so good. I feel like I'm kind of trying to catch up to them half the time. Like, you know, Liam Weedle, he plays with so many people. He's just a monster. Liam on bass is just absolutely incredible as well.
I tear up every time I watch him play. It's like oh shit, I don't know if I should be playing at all, but he's pretty good. But I mean, I think, and that's another interesting thing, I mean, is, you know, as you said, like this whole solo guitarist sort of solo artist thing is getting bigger and bigger. I mean, it was a big thing sort of in the late 80s, sort of early 90s, where you had like your stereotypical guys like Satch and Vi and the Lords, the Cacophony stuff. But more recently, I've certainly noticed like a lot of guys are stepping up and putting themselves out there as this sort of independent, you know, artists to be able to put their own music out under their name. But what I've found is that there's this other circle of musicians that have always been there, but I've maybe it's just me being more attentive to it, but it's this session group of people that are just, they're not interested in, well, at least the perception from my point of view is like, they're not interested in being in a band to be part of that band, and that's my branding. It's like, sure. I'm going to play with these guys. Now I'm going to play with these guys. I'm going to tour with these guys. I'm going to record on this release and, you know, not even be a key member, but I just want to lay down, you know, some bass or play drums on that and be a contributor. And they've got no, it's almost like they haven't got the ego is just not there, where they're so fixated on making a name for themselves. It's just about being so immersed in the music, where they'll just be a part of as many different projects as possible to be better musicians. And I am so envious of that, because
I'm envious of that too.
Because I do not have that in me, but I wish I had it in me. Because I sort of look at it and go, that's so cool to be, because it's almost like, and this is all coming from sort of my lens, but there seems to be an element of selflessness that's attached to a lot of these guys, where it's just, they're just so immersed in just being a part of music, you know, and rather than this self-branding journey that they're going on.
Yeah.
It's just, so I've noticed that a lot more with some of these solo guitarists, because they're bringing out these amazing bands with them. But these guys are, you know, if you look up a name, you go, like, I should say, oh, this bass player's really good, or the drummer's really good.
Mm.
You look them up and then you go, oh, shit, they played with like 50 artists that I know, but would never know that they've ever associated with them.
Yeah, so I know.
It's super cool.
It's super cool. And yeah, like, I envy those guys too. It's just awesome. In fact, like, we're doing this show in England at this at Tech Fest, and I was chatting to this guy in this band, and he was like, oh, you know, I was going to ask if you wanted to fill in on a tour, but I figure, you know, you got your own thing going on. I was like, oh no, like, please, is that how I'm perceived? Like, please hire me for that tour. That would be awesome. I mean, I would love to do that stuff as well. I think those guys, you know, that do a lot of the session work and play with heaps of people and all that, it's just such a great way to be busy, because otherwise you're doing just your one project that might, you know, be in a slow period or doing nothing. And people, I think they do kind of brand you with that. Oh, he does that band. He's not going to do anything else. Or I've certainly run into that heaps of times. People think I just do my thing. And so, yeah, I'm too busy. I won't do anything else. So the flip side is, you know, if you're out there, you build up the name as that guy to call if you need a pro musician. And I guess it's just a different way of being a musician, but totally awesome. Like, just a great way of doing it.
It's just another level of, you create your own business of being, you know, the artist that you're creating and all the dimensions that are attached to it. And you'll have another guy who is all session, and that's his business, you know. Yeah. So it's a full-time gig. And so, yeah, you might do a run of shows with one artist, but that artist isn't touring all year, or they're not recording all year, or not bringing in, you know, there's not enough money there to supplement a full year of pay. So you keep moving. And so there's probably a couple of motivations. Obviously, you want to, you know, for some people to be able to play music and make a living off it is just the dream. And there's probably the other side of it, where it's like, if I get to play with lots of different people, different styles, different genres of music, then I'm only going to get better and more versatile, which will then just open up more opportunities for me to be able to play and do these amazing things. But to see, you know, like, you know, years ago, I would never have thought that some of the best musicians in the world were the backing bands in some of these big pop artists, you know, and some of the best guitarists in the world are sitting in the background behind, you know, artists like Madonna and Cher and, you know, Katy Perry and all these big pop artists. And it's just like, those bands, I mean, that's why they're there, is like, they just need to be on, you know? But then you look into these guys and they're doing so many different things. It's not just that one gig that they've got. They're constantly doing all these different types of shows and recordings, and it's cool. Like, it's really cool, but you realize these guys are in another league altogether. It's just a different world.
I mean totally agree. I haven't done really, you know, much outside of my little bubble for a while, but I remember back in the day, I kind of never had an interest in doing just, you know, one band or anything like that. And so I dabbled in lots of stuff. Like, I remember doing cover bands when I was younger, and, you know, and I played guitar for a little bit with Casey Donovan off the back of Australian Idol, which was just like super weird. Mm. But I mean, even that situation of, I was really young and didn't know anything, and being on, you know, this, you know, they were like flying us around to playing this festival or whatever, Woodford, or I can't even remember what it was or something.
Yeah.
And that was the most nerve-wracking experience of my entire musical life. And it was really only to get up there and play a few open chords.
Yeah.
But it was like I learned so much about like rolling around with these super pro musicians and how they do it and having to, you know, prove your worth in those circumstances. That's where I met Bo, actually, who does a lot of key stuff on my records. And he's a huge dude now, killing it all over the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, like... the best thing for any musician, hands down, is playing with other people as much as possible, whenever possible. And yeah, I mean, it seems sadly like for a lot of guys, that's just such a hard thing to do. And I totally get it. Like, it's so many things have to come together for that to happen, right? Like, know people near you who are interested in what you do, see the project as, you know, worthy enough to invest nights away from the couch in and all the rest of it.
That's
it's
right.
It's very tricky, and I totally get that.
But I think also a lot of people just stay within their comfort zone as well. So if they're looking for people to play music with, they're usually looking at the people that they already know or a mutual friend.
Yeah.
Instead of just basically going way out of their circles and ultimately finding someone who's got the same motivation that you do.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult thing because it's a social situation where you've got to break the ice with somebody that you've never had a connection with prior and form some sort of relationship with them and, you know, work together. And sometimes people think it's very much short term. People just think, oh, well, it's easier to find my mate or my mate's mate and start something with them and just cross my fingers that everyone's going to be having the same amount of buy-in.
Yeah, totally.
Because they're just thinking about that short term. They don't want to deal with the awkwardness of having to try and start something up with a stranger. But that could end up actually working out better in the long term.
Yeah, it almost always does work better in the long term, I think. It's like, you know, I did a show in the US where I'd never met the band in my entire life. We'd never rehearsed.
That scares the shit out of me.
It was absolutely the most terrifying experience. And it was also being filmed by, like, you know, this James Cameron camera rig, and everything was recorded for the internet forever. And it was very, very nerve-wracking. But that's when I really learned, like, oh man, this is what pro musicians are about. Like, it was the most flawless set I've ever done. And I really just, it was terrifying. I had to start the show thinking, like, right, these guys are literally just, I have to treat them like my iPod and hope that they iPod correctly and I'll do my bit correctly and hopefully it all comes across fine. And it did. And that was the first exposure I'd had to, you know, pro musicians are going to get it done. And to a certain element, the whole, like, mateship and, like, kind of social aspect can come later. So I've kind of moved forward in with the solo project with that mentality as well. Like, when I was looking for, the only drummers I've ever had since I've started doing this have never lived anywhere near me, either in another country or, you know, I worked with Rob Brenz for a bit and he's in Melbourne. And when he was too busy, I remember, so I was like, dude, who can play my stuff, do you reckon? He was like, there's really only one guy, this guy, Liam Weedle. And he's young enough to take the punishment as well. And so, yeah, he's been in Adelaide. And it's funny. It's like, by virtue of the really professional relationship where everyone is already a kind of consummate professional, there's almost no tension on the personal aspect because everything is quite clear cut and people know how to, I guess, you know, be respectful and tour properly and, you know, what's fair and what isn't fair.
And I guess when you start to associate with people like that, they've ultimately got a goal themselves where they're on a similar path, unique path, but similar in the sense that they're building up their own reputation as a professional musician.
Yes, totally.
And so, you know, they're like, you know, it's very cliche, but you're only as good as the last gig that you did, or last people that you worked with, or your last output, you know. So especially when you're self-employed, you can't hide behind a business or an employer or things like that blame somebody else. It's just like this, you know, yep, my bad and I've got to fix it, or you prepare better. And that's why, as you said, that situation in the US, which just sweating thinking about it.
I'm sweating thinking, remembering it. It was very intense, yeah.
But just to walk into that and just know that the stakes are there for everybody. You know, every single person that's on that stage has the same the same level of commitment in their own domain. And so it's not like, well, I'm only here because, well, I've got nothing better to do. And, you know, I like this, a bit of fun, you know, like hanging out with mates and we'll go and get a beer afterwards or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's like, this is my career. This is my livelihood. This is everything, right? I give a shit about. So I'm going to prepare for this and make sure that I don't fuck up. And yeah, times however many are on the stage at that time.
Yeah.
But to throw it out there and just cross your fingers, I mean, that would have been a huge thing to experience.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I'd never worked with like real session dudes before, and it was actually funny, like the level of pro. I remember, you know, we'd never met. We were doing a sound check for the show, and I'm thinking like, oh man, I wonder if they can even play my material right. And Matt Rodriguez, the bass player, he was actually like, oh, I think you played that thing wrong. And I was like, what do you mean? And he like played me the riff. I was like, oh yeah, I was playing it wrong. Like, I was playing it wrong and he was playing it right.
Just got schooled.
Yeah, I did. So it's funny. So yeah, it's just a different way of doing it, I suppose. It's the way I prefer to do it. And yeah, for those guys as well, like, it's, you know, they know what their job is, which is to come in and execute the music perfectly.
Mm.
And my job is to make the music and align up the opportunities that we can all mutually share and enjoy.
Mm.
So yeah, that's pretty clear cut.
Must be pretty cool, especially after that. I mean, you probably already had experiences of it previously, but at that point in time, to be able to sort of discover that level of trust in other people.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Very bizarre.
Just to, like, going back to what I said before, like, one thing I'm constantly challenging myself is that to put trust in other people, I've got to find the right people though. That's the critical element that sometimes gets missed. But, you know, to put trust in other people, to know that they can do something and get something done, is huge. And I think a lot of people, when it comes down to it, probably struggle with putting a degree of trust in others, especially strangers. You know? Yeah. So that would have been just, at least from my point of view, that would have been such an eye-opening experience to be able to sort of just go, wow, like I can give it to somebody and have faith that they're going to be able to do it and get it over the line.
Yeah. It was strange because, you know, I came from that band mentality of we've got to rehearse, you know, a million hours a week constantly for no reason. And even then botched the gig, you know, whereas, you know, yeah, working with these guys and seeing, wow, just pull off this. I mean, you can watch the shows. It's the 2014 Surf Factory Party on YouTube. You can check it out. There was no rehearsals there. And pretty much ever since I've done the solo thing, I don't think, I mean, even in the last 2 years, maybe only rehearsed like a few times at that. We might get together, which is, you know, an effort. It's an added effort because we're all interstate from each other. You know, if we throw a new song maybe into the set, we'll have a couple runs through the set or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, almost every show is, you know, can everyone do the thing? Yep. Okay, cool. See you on stage. You know, and that's just kind of how it goes down now, which is nice.
Oh, it must be amazing. It must be amazing to, especially now that you've got some guys you've worked with for a while as well.
That is, yeah. Yeah.
So there's another level of trust there already. Like,
it certainly makes it easy, like less kind of running in the background, less tabs open of panic.
I mean, one thing we used to say years ago, especially when we had people coming in to play and we're like, oh, we're going to have to get together for like a few days and rehearse or whatever. And I remember, it wasn't someone in our band, but someone who came along to one of the rehearsals and they're talking about working on new songs new songs to play live as far as songs that we already knew or put out or recorded, but new songs that were going to be introduced to the set.
Yeah.
And we're like, no, like the rehearsals to rehearse the end product, like it's, that's right. That's for home time. That's exactly. Sitting at home and smashing it out.
That's right.
And really, I mean, you shouldn't have to spend 3, 4, 5 hours sitting in a rehearsal room, running through, trying to work out people's parts and things like that. That's at home by yourself. And if you've got questions, then you talk isolated. But when you come in together, you know, if you've got a set that you're about to do a show, you just smash that set out and that's about it, you know? And I think that's one thing that probably separates the pros versus the guys who are sort of hovering around the sort of the amateur sort of thing trying to get into that next level of professionalism where, you know, they get together every week, you know, every week for rehearsal, and it's great and they enjoy it, but it's, you know, probably 80% fucking around and 20% actually probably running through songs. And,
yeah, sure.
You know, there's a lot of benefits of doing it, but they're probably only getting so far and they probably don't even need to rehearse once a week. They can probably rehearse once a month or once a quarter or something like that. And in that time, they all sort of work at home and work out their stuff, you know, in isolation and bring it all together and just iron out the little kinks that might be there.
Yeah.
But that's always been, it's not practice as such. Yeah. And I think that's what people sort of look at it as. It's like, we're going to get together and practice. And it's like,
yeah,
no,
totally.
No, don't do that.
No, that's a big waste of everyone's time for sure.
Are you going into a similar situation going to the States in a few weeks' time? Are you bringing the guys over with you, or are you going to go into another situation like you mentioned before where you're going to work with
like session guys?
Some session guys.
No, so this is just me solo missioning. So yeah. There's no like band performances this time. Yep. So I've just got a series of kind of solo performances with tracks lined up across NAMM, and those will be announced shortly. No bandy over there this time.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good in a way. It makes sort of streamlines everything a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I both the guys, as far as I'm aware, have never been over, and I think that they should, everyone should go once. I think I remember the first couple of times I went to NAMM, it was really inspiring, really cool just to, less about the gear and all the big famous people, you know, walking around and all that stuff, but just everyone who is kind of relevant to your world from the internet is like a real person in one place for 1 week.
You're real.
Yeah. And I that really legitimately blew me away. And, it, you know, I've lined up, you know, tours and all kinds of collaborations and, you know, great friendships, like lifelong friendships and stuff from going and meeting guys. I've been over there many times. I think this will be the 8th time.
Yeah.
And it's really only about that now. It's about seeing guys from the industry, and everyone around the world is in one spot, and for that it's really wonderful, and the hangs are good, and going to be doing some cool content out at the Surf Factory, you know, some videos and performances and all that kind of fun stuff. So it's always a good time. It's a great hang.
Oh, and I've never been to NAMM, but from what I've seen, I mean, especially me being a bit of a sort of social butterfly, it just looks like the network, the mecca of networking.
It just looks like such a
great place to be able to just, as you said, build friendships with people, but also just to be able to talk shop, which, you know, can lead to opportunities down the track. And
yeah, it has.
Just it's plant wonderful. Seeds with people, and people know who you are and vice versa.
Yeah, you would kill it there. You really would.
I'd just be a pain in the ass for you. Just trying to pitch ideas all the time.
Just rustle up stuff.
Oh yeah. Hustle, you know, but it looks like it's from what I've seen, it looks like a massive operation that they put together.
It's insane.
It's like a massive convention center, isn't it? That they set it up.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's many 3 or 4 stories tall.
Mm.
You feel like you've walked across the city to get from one side to the other.
Wow.
And there's, you know, like the gigs that are on around it and everything. It's really cool. It's totally insane. And I've actually, the first time I went over there, I was kind of hired as like a hired gun guitarist for an amp manufacturer to, demo some gear that they were hoping to sell to a bigger amp company over there and stuff. And it was a whole thing. But so I've actually been there both from the exhibitor point of view and as an artist now. Mm. But, you know, yeah, it's the operation they run is just unbelievable. It's huge. It's really quite impressive.
Yeah, definitely have to be something I need to go to at least once sometime down the track. It just, it looks really cool. It just looks like a really, really interesting atmosphere to be in. Just to having so many, I think you said before, like just a lot of like-minded people that are ultimately, you know, the best of their niche groups are all coming together, and whether it be from a manufacturing point of view and retailer point of view, or the artist as well, and everyone just coming together and talking shop and all sorts. I think it sounds exciting.
I think that's what it's best for. It's for the relationship building, everyone being just in one roof for 1 week. It's really cool.
Have you finished the next album? Or?
I have. Yeah. I've finished kind of everything on my end.
Yeah.
And now Dave Horgan has it.
Yeah.
And is chipping away at it as fast as he can between being a father and a doctor. So, yeah.
As you do.
Real adult business. Yeah.
Are you going to use NAMM to sort of plant seeds around that release, or do anything that sort of teases what's going to be sort of coming in the future? Or
yeah, no, probably not so much this time. It's probably a little bit... This is the most wonderfully prepared I've ever been for a record, actually. Like, I have most of it really finished, which is great. But I'm just going to really take my time with it and make sure I have all the assets that go with promoting it and the subsequent kind of tours around its release kind of all in place before I really start hitting the ground. Previously, I've kind of set all these deadlines and announced things and then kind of panicked up to those finish lines.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this time, yeah. So this time I want to try and just be really patient with it and, you know, accept that I've kind of vanished for a couple of years there and make sure that I've got everything really prepared to come back and kind of, not be, you know, worrying about things leading up to, you know, the important stuff like the tours, and I can really just be focused on the music at that time. And
that's cool.
But yeah, so I won't be kind of hustling the album this time. I did on my last EP. It was really good. I kind of strategically dropped a big video 3 days before NAMM.
Yeah.
So that worked really well. Mm. Lots of people were there like, oh man, I just saw your video. Like, so that was all a bit of a strategy that worked really well. But yeah, I think a lot of people get the same idea. So you've got to find your minute to slot your thing in there before NAMM. But yeah, this time I won't be doing that. I'm just over there to do some playing and some content with my endorsers and stuff like that.
And that stuff, I mean, it's almost sort of reversing in a way. You probably potentially can or are using NAMM as content creation that can ultimately drive traffic towards the album when eventually it comes out, you know, just, you know, people... You attract people from all sorts of different spots, and so you might have people that are, I'm sure you get it, you know, people that are avid supporters of the brands that you associate with, and that's how they discover you, rather than just discovering you because they're into sort of, you know, this solo guitarist sort of genre of music.
Yeah, that's found a huge part of it, for sure.
They found you otherwise. So, you know, doing some factory videos and some other stuff, you know, could be cool little marketing tools to help with the album to draw some attention in.
Yeah, I see it's all a part of the circle of life in my world. It all plays positively into it. And I've had countless people who have discovered me through those channels, and less about, you know, I'm really into the avant-garde, you know, neo-noir instrumental scene and plucked you out of the internet. There's been definitely a lot of both.
Yeah, go to jamesnorbertavani.bandcamp.com, and that's the best place to discover his music, buy some merchandise, download his music, et cetera, et cetera. And you can also find him on all the socials as well. He's got a great Instagram account, follow his Insta stories. So really, really fun stuff there. And of course on Facebook, and I don't know if he's on Twitter actually. Anyway, go and check the show notes over at andydowling.net or andysocial.net, or just click through on your podcast player. There should be a bunch of clickable links there. I'll also dump some YouTube videos in there, embed a couple of videos and highlight some of his music that I really like as well. But awesome guy. Great to catch up with him, and go and follow his stuff. And that's about it. I've got to keep reminding myself to try and wrap up these episodes. For people that have been playing along, I've also got my Crazy Talk episodes that come out on Tuesday mornings at 6 a.m. every week. So as a result, I'm trying to reduce the amount of crapping on I have in these main Thursday night episodes that come out each week. So I'll leave all the waffling for the Crazy Talk episodes. Go and tune into that if you like the sound of my voice. Maybe it's just me, but anyway, you can go over there and listen to me waffle about God knows what. But you can also go to andydowling.net where that is my hub, my portal page to absolutely everything that I'm involved with, everything from my social media handles to each of the different podcasts that I've previously been involved with or currently involved with, as well as my band Lord. Everything is there, nice and easy. You can contact me via all those social media pages. I'm on pretty much everything, but not TikTok and not Snapchat. Maybe one day, I don't know. Anyway, you can find me. It's easy. AndyDowling.net. It's all there. I don't need to explain it anymore. That's enough. Another guest coming next week, so stay tuned. Thank you so much for the support, and bye, 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 bye.
Larry. Larry, please.